Hello and welcome to our digestive hormones module. It's the hormones of the digestive tract. It's part of the digestion, the whole big digestion module. Most people don't think about the digestive tract as being part of the endocrine system, but indeed, over 24 hormones have been identified to control various aspects of digestion, and digestion is probably more than any other endocrine gland that we've identified, right? Most other endocrine glands do 2 or 3. So a lot of hormones. We're going to go through many of them. We'll go through the main ones. I'm going to introduce you to the not so main ones and give you a good starting point so that you can help people as you're watching what's going wrong with their digestion and their complaints. You can start to see where things might be failing. So this really does require that you have a good understanding of the digestive tract. So if you're going through this and you haven't gone through all the other parts of this module, I suggest you go back and fill it in and then listen to this again, because it's really important to understand the anatomy physiology. But I will review that in a couple of diagrams. Before we begin, we're going to make sure that you know that I am not teaching you anything that is meant to replace a one-on-one relationship with your qualified healthcare professional. If you're on any medications, then I certainly recommend that you make decisions in concert with that doctor. And I encourage you, and the reason I do these disclaimers at the beginning of each presentation is to make sure that when you're working with your clients that you've made a disclaimer too, that you're educating them, you're basically giving them the owner's guide to their body, guiding them onto how to get their body in balance, but you're not diagnosing or treating any diseases. There's an overall picture of the digestive tract with superimposed spots where various hormones, the main hormones, are released. We're going to keep coming back to this picture as I introduce each of the hormones and the groups of hormones to show you where they come into play. So there's hormones that are released in the stomach, in the duodenum, in the ileum, in the jejunum, and also way down low in the colon, which isn't shown here. And the pancreas has a part in this as well, obviously. In addition to the pancreatic enzymes and insulin and glucagon, there are actually some other hormones produced by the pancreas, and I'm going to introduce you to some of those. So these are the major gut hormones that we're going to spend most of our time on. This chart tells you where they come from. I've got another chart that tells you where they come from and what they do, their main function. And then we're going to go into more detail on each of them. So gastrin is produced by the stomach. Secretin is produced by the duodenum, and there's actually a few of the other hormones are considered part of the secretin family, like GIP and VIP. Cholecystokinin, CCK, produced in the duodenum. Gastric inhibitory peptide, duodenum. Glucagon-like peptide, the duodenum, and then other parts of the small intestine as well. Somatostatin in the stomach, duodenum, and pancreas. Motilin in the duodenum, and VIP, a vasoactive intestinal peptide produced by neurons that exist in the intestine, but also in the central nervous system and the urogenital tract. And as we look at what each of these does, it'll make sense as to where they're produced in relationship to what they actually do. So here's a summary chart of those major digestive hormones and a couple of extras. We've got gastrin produced by the stomach, and it's responsible for the production of stomach acid and the motility of the stomach, that movement, that churning, that peristalsis that happens in the stomach that churns it around and mixes all the foods together. Cholecystokinin, which is triggered by the presence of fat in the duodenum, and it stimulates the production of the pancreatic juices and the contraction and emptying of the gallbladder. Secretin is produced in the duodenum, and it kind of goes along with the cholecystokinin. They're required together because it stimulates bicarbonate production by the pancreas to neutralize the acidic chyme as it comes out of the stomach and into the duodenum. It also stimulates bile production and pepsin, and it also stimulates increases in the CCK, the cholecystokinin. There are a class of hormones called incretins. GIP and GLP are the two main ones. GIP is called gastric inhibitory peptide, and we'll also see there's a new name for it that has to do with its ability to stimulate insulin. And then GLP is a glucagon-like peptide, and as you recall, glucagon comes from the pancreas, and it's kind of the opposite of insulin in that it helps to raise the blood sugar. So these hormones, we'll go through each of them in detail, but basically they're responsible for increasing insulin, inhibit glucagon, slowing the rate of absorption of the nutrients by reducing the gastric emptying. So instead of the stomach just empty everything in, it slows that down so that we get a slow absorption of sugars and other nutrients into the bloodstream after eating. Somatostatin is basically the brakes. It is produced by the stomach, the intestine, and the pancreas, and it inhibits pretty much all the secretions. Gastrin, CCK, secretin, GIP, growth hormone, TSH, glucagon, and insulin. It affects widespread the body and the secretion of these various hormones. I put dopamine and serotonin in here because even though we think of them as neurotransmitters, they act like hormones in the digestive tract. They're both produced throughout the digestive tract by the mucosa and also by the brain. And dopamine reduces the motility, the movement, and protects the mucosa. Serotonin inhibits the gastric acid and stimulates the movement. And we'll go into a little bit more detail. Way back when, earlier in this module, we talked about the migrating motor complex. And serotonin is a potent stimulator of the migrating motor complex. In fact, some of the supplements that help to improve the migrating motor complex, that movement, that basically if you think of it as peristalsis of the small intestine, it's the movement that helps push things along. Serotonin helps to stimulate that and is in like 5-HTP and B6 and some other things that stimulate serotonin are found in some of those supplements. Peptide YY, you've heard of that in our appetite hormone section, mainly produced in the ileum and the colon, a little bit in some of the other parts of the tract. It inhibits the gastric motility and increases the water and electrolyte absorption in the colon. It can possibly suppress pancreatic secretions, and it overall can increase the efficiency of digestion. So let's take a closer look at each of these hormones. So the way that this presentation is going to go, I've got a hormone, I'm going to explain it, I'm going to tell you where it's produced, what it does, and in some cases refer you back to that overall picture. So let's take a look at gastrin. The little box over to the right is the amino acid sequence for it. It's secreted by the stomach. There's some cells in the antrum, the earlier part of the stomach, called the G cells. And it's basically stimulated by food just planting itself in there. I say, okay, here's some food. Let's secrete some gastrin. It's especially sensitive to proteins, but also vagal nerve stimulation, and the distension of the stomach produces more gastrin. So this food arrives there. It starts to distend the stomach. That stimulates these G cells to produce gastrin. What does gastrin do? Well, it stimulates cells called the parietal cells to secrete HCl, hydrochloric acid. Gastrin is the only hormone that can stimulate HCl production. So in our clients with low HCl production, we may be looking at problems with gastrin. Now, why would the body not produce enough gastrin? Well, maybe there's some damage to the lining of the stomach. Okay, so these are some of the things you can look at. It also increases histamine release so that, you know, as things are coming in, if there's things that we don't really want or need in there, we can help with pushing them along via histamine. It increases the motility of the stomach. And, you know, when the food hits the stomach and we secrete the hydrochloric acid, we don't want it to just sit there. It's not going to do a very good job of digesting, so the stomach starts to, almost like I think of it as a washing machine, where it does this like, it kind of moves it around and mixes it up together. And that's an important thing that gastrin does as well. Gastrin also can open the pyloric sphincter. Well, the pyloric sphincter is the sphincter between the stomach and the duodenum. So it opens the pyloric sphincter so that by the time the bolus of food, which now is called chyme, makes its way down to that pyloric sphincter, it's able to move into the small intestine, the duodenum. It also relaxes the ileocecal valve. Now let's think about why it might do that. Well, the ileocecal valve is the valve between the ileum and the cecum, the small and the large intestine. It's the gateway. And so if we've got more food coming in to the stomach, we want the ileocecal valve to open to allow whatever else has been built up in the small intestine, the food that's been digested beforehand, to enter into the large intestine, whatever's left of it, the waste, to be eliminated. Okay, so there's something called the gastroileal reflex, and that's what causes the ileocecal valve, and gastrin is responsible for that. Gastrin also helps to stimulate the growth of the mucosal lining. And that makes sense if you really think about it, because it's helping to secrete more hydrochloric acid, which could damage the delicate cells of the stomach if we didn't have a really good mucosal lining. So gastrin helps to stimulate the growth. It also stimulates basically a precursor to pepsin, which is an enzyme that breaks down protein called pepsinogen. So it takes pepsinogen and it stimulates that pepsinogen to then activate into pepsin. Actually, the hydrochloric acid activates it into pepsin. It's inhibited by low pH. Some sources say below 3, some sources say below 2. But that makes sense, right? Because we're producing the acid, and as soon as the acidic environment becomes the ideal for protein digestion, it stops producing more gastrin. That makes sense. In folks who have overproduction of acid, and there are people like that, not that many compared to what people think or medicine thinks, but that could be a problem by that negative feedback loop not working. Okay? So it may not be the cells that are supposed to detect that the pH has gone down, may not be detecting that, and then you can overproduce acid. Not a common situation, though. It's inhibited by some of the inhibitory peptides or hormones. Somatostatin, remember we said that one was the brake. It turns everything off. Gastric inhibitory protein, and I'm going to keep calling it that until I get stopped. I can't even get put in jail for calling it that. That's what I've been used to calling it. So gastric inhibitory protein and vasoactive inhibitory protein, and then the glucagon and calcitonin. All of these are things that inhibit the gastrin. Okay, they turn it off. Because we can't just keep producing stomach acid. We need to turn it off at the right time. So if we look back at our picture, we see that we have food entering the stomach up here, right? And that stimulates right up here in the antrum, these cells, these A cells in the antrum, to release gastrin. And then the churning happens, and it opens the pyloric sphincter here. That's where the pyloric sphincter is. And then the food makes its way through. And different foods have different rates of moving through the digestive tract and amounts of time it stays in the stomach. We talked about that back in a previous module where we had a chart that listed how long different foods would stay in the stomach. Okay, and once the, we'll look at these in a little bit, but when the gastric inhibitory protein gets released, it inhibits the release of gastrin, as does the somatostatin isn't on here. Okay, so let's look at the next hormone, which is cholecystokinin. Secreted by the duodenum. So as soon as that bolus of food makes its way in here, into this part of the duodenum, it stimulates the release of secretin and CCK. So let's look at what cholecystokinin CCK does. It's mainly going to be stimulated by the presence of fat, slightly by amino acids. So if somebody just eats a hunk of hard candy, or a piece of bread, it's unlikely to stimulate much in the way of cholecystokinin because there's not a lot of fat there to digest. It stimulates the release of the digestive enzymes by the pancreas, and in particular case, lipase would be the one, the fat digesting. It stimulates the gallbladder to contract, relax the sphincter, and release the bile into that section of the duodenum. CCK is the only hormone that can actually cause the gallbladder to contract and the sphincter to open. It's the only hormone to do that. So if you have people with a lot of bile stasis, where they're not able to contract the gallbladder and release bile, it's a possibility that they're low in CCK. It decreases the gastric emptying because it's like, okay, we have this big bolus of food here. We want to slow down the gastric emptying so we can handle the food that's just come through. And it sends a satiety signal through to the hypothalamus. Okay? So that's CCK. Again, CCK is right here. And it's released along with secretin, which does some complementary activities, as we'll see in a bit. Okay? So the CCK goes and stimulates the gallbladder, which produces the bile and dumps it into the upper part of the duodenum. Make sense? It also stimulates the pancreas and stimulates these digestive enzymes to be secreted as well. Make sense? So let's look at secretin next. There we have secretin. It's secreted by the duodenum, as we just said. It's stimulated by the bile acid, by fatty food and acid in the duodenum. So as soon as that bolus comes in, the fatty food is going to stimulate the CCK and the secretin. The acid in the duodenum is going to trigger it, in particular because the secretin is going to be responsible for helping the pancreas to secrete bicarbonate to neutralize that acid. And of course, it's stimulated by bile acid, which is stimulated by CCK. So it works very closely with CCK. It's the most potent stimulator of the secretion of sodium bicarbonate by the pancreas. Okay, whereas CCK can stimulate it somewhat, secretin is the most potent. It stimulates bile secretion, and it also helps to increase CCK. So these guys work in concert with each other to help make sure that we get efficient breakdown and digestion of this food. It causes a contraction of the pyloric sphincter versus a relaxation, so closing of the pyloric sphincter. So we say, okay, we've got enough food to handle. Let's close it. And it doesn't mean that the minute secretin hits there, it's a buildup, right? So everything is like, okay, now we have enough secretin in there, it's going to contract it. We want to make sure that the whole bolus, or at least a decent sized bolus of food, has contracted and left the stomach. It promotes growth and maintenance of the pancreas. So in addition to stimulating the pancreas to secrete pancreatic enzymes or to secrete the bicarbonate, it actually promotes growth and maintenance. So it's a repair type of a hormone as well. It decreases the secretion of acid in the stomach, so it counters the effect of gastrin and the motility of the stomach, because it's like basically saying, okay, we're done with that phase of digestion, the stomach. Let's just move on and let's put our attention here in the duodenum. It's inhibited by somatostatin, as are most of these hormones, and it's got a family. So the family also includes the GIP, which is, I call it gastric inhibitory protein. Now it's being called glucose-dependent insulinotrophic peptide. When we look at its functions, we'll understand why. And VIP, which is vasoactive intestinal peptide. Okay, so I think we've seen this picture enough to get the idea. Let's go through and summarize. We've got food coming in, stimulates the release of gastrin. The gastrin gets released in here, which stimulates the HCl. The food gets churned around, gets moved into the duodenum because the gastrin also relaxes that pyloric sphincter, allows the food to pass through. The presence of the chyme in the duodenum will cause the release of GIP, which we're going to get to in a minute, the release of secretin and CCK, which the CCK then stimulates the gallbladder to release its bile, to tell the pancreas to release the digestive enzymes, and the secretin to cause the pancreas to release bicarbonate to neutralize the bolus of food. From here, we're going to see that everything starts to move down and goes into the jejunum. So let's look at GIP. Gastric inhibitory peptide, also known as glucose-dependent insulinotrophic peptide. Okay, so it's a member of the secretin family. It's synthesized by neuroendocrine cells in the mucosa of the duodenum and the jejunum. It's stimulated by glucose and fat in the duodenum and acid in the stomach. Okay, so there's enough acid in the stomach, it reaches a certain level, the GIP comes in so that it can decrease that. It also stimulates insulin release and glucose use by the muscles. That's why we call it now glucose-dependent insulinotrophic peptide. So it's pretty busy in nature. It stimulates lipogenesis by the adipose tissue. It inhibits the gastric acid secretion and the gastrin release. So it's basically saying, okay, stomach, you've done your job. It's time. It decreases the stomach churning and slows the emptying. And there are receptors for it on the beta cells of the pancreas, which is how it came to be called glucose-dependent insulinotrophic peptide. So it's a family of hormones we called incretins. However, too much of it can lead to insulin resistance and obesity because it triggers the release of insulin. Right? So overproduction is problematic. Again, we'll go right back to our picture. Food comes into the stomach. The gastrin gets released. It causes the release of the stomach acid and the pepsinogen. It causes the relaxation of the sphincter. It causes churning of the stomach to mix the food around with the digestive juices. The chyme comes through into the duodenum, triggers the GIP to say, okay, we don't need gastrin anymore. Triggers the secretin to stimulate the pancreas to produce bicarbonate so that we can neutralize the acidic chyme. Stimulates the CCK to be released so that it talks to the gallbladder. The gallbladder then releases the bile, dumps it in here, and now we're set up for appropriate carbohydrate and fat digestion. A lot of the protein breakdown happened in the stomach. Yes, there's still a little bit more protein breakdown that will happen in the duodenum, pancreatic enzymes, the proteases, but a good part of that happens in the stomach. Once that's all done, we have the food gets digested, it enters down into the jejunum, the nutrients get absorbed, utilized by the tissues, and we're done. And here's where the pancreas also secretes the insulin to help do that. Whew. It's a big process, isn't it? Yeah, not for the faint of heart. So our next picture is somatostatin. The brakes, okay, we've done all this great work. It's also called growth hormone inhibitory hormone. It's got two different forms. It's got the number 14 is associated. I don't mean 14 forms, but it's like somatostatin-14 is in the hypothalamus and somatostatin-28 is in the stomach. It's stimulated by the stomach acid and the sympathetic nervous system, and that's where the hypothalamus comes in. So the tiger starts chasing you and the body produces somatostatin. Why? To shut down the digestion. You've heard me talk about the fact that this happens over and over again. Whenever we talk about stress, we say it's not a good idea to be eating when you're in sympathetic dominant state because the digestive tract gets turned down. Somatostatin is the vehicle for doing that. It's also inhibited by parasympathetic. So if we want to allow the digestive process to happen the way it's supposed to, that's where we do our breathing, our heart math, or some sort of prayer, gratitude, whatever you want to do before your meal to take yourself out of sympathetic and into parasympathetic. So somatostatin gets secreted by many places in the digestive tract and including the islet cells in the pancreas. So it's secreted by the stomach, the duodenum, the islet cells. It goes into the stomach, but it also goes into the bloodstream. It inhibits everything. It inhibits gastrin, VIP, GIP, secretin, motilin, which we're going to talk about in a moment, growth hormone, insulin, glucagon, pancreatic enzymes, and bile flow. And when we look at motilin in a bit, we're going to see why being under stress and eating when you're in sympathetic mode is going to affect the gut all out and can actually increase the risk of SIBO and constipation, because Motilin is responsible for helping to move things along and helps to stimulate the migrating motor complex. So somatostatin stops it all. It's supposed to stop it when the digestive process is done. It's a normal trigger back. Okay, we don't need all these things anymore. Turn it off so that we can rest in between meals. But it's also turned off by the sympathetic nervous system, and that's where the scary part comes in. It increases fluid absorption and decreases intestinal secretions, right? So no more hormones being secreted, no more enzymes being secreted, no more gastric juices. It decreases the motility. It really slows down the motility and the movement because it's not needed when the digestion is over or when we're in sympathetic mode and there's tigers chasing us. Decreases the absorption of glucose, amino acids, and triglycerides. So basically, it's the brakes. Somatostatin is the brakes. So let's talk about Motilin, since I just mentioned it. It's secreted by the duodenum and promotes intestinal motility, movement, increasing the activity of the MMC, the migrating motor complex. It stimulates the production of pepsin, which is the protein digesting enzyme in the stomach. It rises after a meal or after drinking water. So if someone is having a lot of stagnation in their digestive tract, they're having constipation or they have SIBO, it's a good idea to, in between meals, not eat, to leave a good 4 hours in between meals to help with the migrating motor complex, as we discussed earlier, but also to drink water in between meals. It causes an acceleration of the gastric emptying and the colonic transit. Okay, so too much Motilin, of course, can maybe trigger diarrhea, right? But not enough can trigger that stagnation that happens and that can lead to things like SIBO and also constipation. There are some antibiotics, in particular erythromycin, that is a Motilin receptor agonist, which means it increases the activity of Motilin. Antagonist would be it's against it and it opposes. Agonist means it increases the activity of Motilin, so it can lead to diarrhea and abdominal cramps, which are common side effects of erythromycin. So everything's in the Goldilocks principle, not too much, not too little. Too little Motilin can lead to constipation, can lead to SIBO, can lead to stagnation. Too much Motilin can lead to diarrhea and cramping. So let's look at a few of the others. Vasoactive intestinal peptide, VIP. Are you a VIP? It's secreted by neuroendocrine cells in the intestine, but it's not just a digestive peptide. It's also used in the central nervous system and the urogenital tract. Okay, it's stimulated by chyme that enters the duodenum. So you can see that in this picture. You see the bolus, and that starts to enter the duodenum. Causes an increase in the intestinal motility and the secretions, right? Because that's what we want. We want to be able to moisturize, lubricate, and digest this food bolus. It relaxes smooth muscle and then inhibits the gastric secretion. So inhibits gastrin and the secretion of the hydrochloric acid. It causes the intestinal capillaries to start to dilate. Why would that be? Well, we want them to be able to be open and able to accept these new nutrients as they get absorbed when the food bolus gets down into the jejunum. There are receptors for VIP in both the small intestine and the large intestine, but also in the lungs, heart, brain, kidney, and spleen. So it's basically a neuropeptide that's helping to move things along. Let's take a look at a few others, and I'll go into a little bit of detail on each of these. Nitric oxide, which is produced throughout the intestine. Histamine, which is produced in the stomach. Peptide YY, which is produced in the ileum and the colon. Serotonin, which is produced in the brain and the gut mucosa, as well as dopamine. Bombesin is produced in the gut and pancreas. Chromogranins in neuroendocrine cells throughout the intestine. Calcitonin gene-related peptide. What's that? We'll find out. Enteric nerves, produce it. So the enteric nerves, meaning that the nerves that line the intestinal tract, the gut, and then enteroglucagon, which is like glucagon. It's produced in the pancreas, but also in the small intestine. So it's a glucagon-like molecule. So let's have a look at some of these in detail. Nitric oxide, it's the ultimate smooth muscle relaxer. And it's super important for in the cardiac system, very important, in the digestive system as well. It decreases motility and relaxes the sphincters. So nitric oxide in the right amount is going to be helpful for the proper movement of the food bolus through the various sphincters. What sphincters do we have? Well, we have the pyloric sphincter between the stomach and the duodenum. And then we have the ileocecal valve, which is between the ileum and the cecum, the small intestine lower and the large intestine. Let's take a look at histamine. Why is histamine important in digestion? Well, it's produced by cells called the enterochromaffin-like cells in the stomach. You can see that there. It's stimulated by gastrin, and it increases the HCL secretion from the parietal cells. So it's part of the complex. So we think of histamine maybe as bad because it can cause increase in mucus formation and runny eyes and all that throughout the body, but it also is super, super important. Let's look at peptide YY. Peptide YY is produced by the large intestine, basically inhibits food intake. It acts on the stomach and the intestine to slow down the movement of the food throughout the digestive tract. Okay, so it basically says, okay, we've got plenty of food in here. We don't need to make any more. And it actually can be produced later. I think it was 90 minutes after you eat, it starts to come into full fruition. Serotonin, a neurotransmitter produced in the brain and gut, and it's said that 90% of all the serotonin in the body is not produced in the brain, but it's produced in the gut. It inhibits gastric acid production. It stimulates the mucus production and promotes the development and maintenance of the neurons in the interstitial cells. So it basically keeps things moving and protected, protects the lining of the gut. And movement, motility, really important. Dopamine is produced by the brain and the GI mucosa and reduces motility and protects the mucosa. And it's thought to control nausea and vomiting if there's like a food poisoning, etc. Increasing dopamine will help to prevent too much nausea and vomiting because it decreases the motility. But the serotonin increases that motility, and that's why it's used in a product. I think it's Pure Encapsulations has a product called Motil Pro. That's really good for increasing the movement of the migrating motor complex, used a lot with people with SIBO. And serotonin precursors are in that. Bombesin. Who's ever heard of bombesin? It's produced throughout the gut and the pancreas. It stimulates the release of CCK. So what is it going to help with? Fat digestion. It stimulates the release of motilin. What is it going to help with? Movement. The migrating motor complex. Stimulates the pancreatic enzyme secretion. What's that going to help with? Well, breaking down the food. It has trophic effects on the developing gut. What does that mean? Well, as the gut is developing, it helps it to grow and develop. And it has a chemoattractant ability with macrophages and lymphocytes. So basically, it helps with the immune system. It helps to enhance the phagocytic process of macrophages. And phagocytosis is where the macrophages, those types of white blood cells, engulf foreign invaders. So it's part of the protection in the gut. Chromogranins. What are those? Well, they're again produced by neuroendocrine cells. They inhibit insulin release. So after you've eaten a meal, it enhances the gastric acid secretion. It can be used to determine if there's an endocrine tumor. So they have this chromo, meaning like color to it. So there's ways to be able to detect a neuroendocrine tumor and monitor the efficacy of treatment. So is it shrinking or is it continuing to grow? calcitonin gene-related peptide is produced by enteric nerves. It inhibits the gastric acid. Notice there's a lot of things that inhibit that gastric acid. So we have a lot of checks and balances in the system. It inhibits pancreatic secretion and causes relaxation of smooth muscle. So it's basically released when we're getting towards the end of digestion to stop the process and allow the food to move through. Enteroglucagon. It's produced by both the small intestine and the pancreas, found in especially high concentrations in the mucous membrane lining of the ileum, colon, and rectum. And it inhibits insulin secretion, just like glucagon, the regular glucagon that's secreted by the pancreas. It has trophic effects on the small intestine, meaning it helps it to grow, it helps it to repair. It's released after a meal that's mixed macronutrient meal, particularly carbohydrate and long-chain fatty acids. The amount secreted is proportional to the amount of unabsorbed food entering the colon, okay? And high concentrations are found in conditions associated with the absorptive loss, like leaky gut. And it's sometimes called glycitin. I like enteroglucagon. Okay? So it has an effect on insulin. Here's a couple of others, and we're going to go into a little more detail on these. Galanin, which is produced by enteric nerves, neuropeptide Y, which we talked a little bit about in our Abbott's Height presentation, produced by enteric nerves, and neurotensin, which is produced in the ileum. So let's look at each of those in turn. Galanin is produced by the enteric nerves, and especially nerves in the liver and the pancreatic islet cells. It inhibits the smooth muscle contraction and postprandial insulin release. So it decreases the postprandial insulin release. Okay, so it's like, okay, we're done. We don't need any more. Neuropeptide Y, we talked a little bit about that when we were talking about appetite. It's produced by the enteric nerves. It regulates blood flow to the intestine, and it's often co-localized with noradrenaline. Noradrenaline is another name for norepinephrine, which is an adrenal hormone. It's found in both the extrinsic, the outside adrenergic nerves, myenteric plexus, and in intrinsic nerves in the myenteric plexus and the submucosal plexi. So basically, what is this? It's found in the nerves, and it affects the blood flow to the intestines and those nerves. It's in highest concentration in the upper part of the intestine, the small intestine, and the distal colon. It's a constrictor, vasoconstrictor, constricts and inhibits the intestinal secretion and depresses colonic motility. Okay, so it's basically slowing down and stopping the process. Neurotensin is produced by the ileum. It affects the motility of the gut. It increases jejunal and ileal fluid secretion. So it's going to help to dilute the foods and bring them in. And sometimes fluid secretion by the jejunum is intentional. If there's some sort of infection, we'll actually secrete fluids from the bloodstream into the lumen, the intestinal lumen. It inhibits the emptying of the stomach again and the secretion of gastric acid. It stimulates pancreatic exocrine and intestinal secretion and the plasma concentrations actually in the bloodstream. So it's not just located in the gut, but the plasma concentrations increase after eating fatty foods. Whew. There's just a few more. Okay, so these we're not going to go into too much detail on. We've already talked about ghrelin. I think you've heard enough about ghrelin. Produced by the stomach, and it stimulates appetite, increases gastric emptying. Okay, glucagon-like peptide 2. We had looked at glucagon-like peptide 1. This one's produced in the ileum, colon, and it stimulates motility and absorption and has trophic effects. Remember, trophic is growth and repair. Pancreatic polypeptide is produced by the pancreas, and it inhibits the pancreatic and biliary secretion. So this one happens when we're getting towards the end and we want to shut down. Trefolpeptides are produced by the stomach and the intestine. their mucosal protection and repair. You're not going to see a lot of stuff about these, but I wanted to make sure that this was complete and introduce you to some of these things. Enkephalons are opiate-like, and they're produced by the stomach and the duodenum. And not really clear exactly what they're doing other than to control pain. Substance P, again, it probably has to do with pain. It's a neuropeptide. It's produced by the enteric nerves. And growth hormone releasing factor, we're not exactly sure what that does in the intestine. It's produced by the small intestine. So what else? The integration of neural and gut. Let's just talk about how the neural function and the endocrine gut functions are related. So we always talk about how digestion does not begin in the stomach. It does not even begin in the mouth. It actually begins in the brain. So when you have thoughts about food or you taste and smell food and chewing, all activates our parasympathetic nervous system. But if we go into eating in a sympathetic dominant state where we're just sitting at our desk and rushing through, we're not going to get full activation of this parasympathetic. The parasympathetic is what stimulates the parietal cells to increase the acid secretion. Remember, we looked at that before. So if you're in sympathetic state, you're not going to get as much acid production, which means that the proteins are not going to get broken down. The minerals are not going to get cleaved from their carriers. Acetylcholine increases gastrin and inhibits the somatostatin. Whereas the sympathetic input, when you're under stress and active and moving and worrying and fretting, increases somatostatin, which inhibits gastric secretion, motility, CCK, secretin, inhibits everything. So the bottom line is, the more you can explain to people why it's so, so very important for them to take their eating seriously, and to sit in a relaxed state, because that actually activates all these hormones that optimize their digestion. The better their digestion's going to be, and the better their overall health are going to be. So lastly, I'm just going to look at how these neural and endocrine functions are integrated. There's local reflexes both through mechanoreceptors and chemoreceptors. Mechanoreceptors have to do with like distension. You know, mechanoreceptors are going to get involved when there's a spreading and expanding, a mechanical shift, a mechanical impulse. The GI tract walls detect movement of the food through it. And that stomach distension activates the parasympathetic nervous system. But if we're in tiger running mode, right, we're running away, we're not going to get that full activation, even though the stomach distension is on our side. And of course, like we said before, that parasympathetic stimulation via acetylcholine increases gastrin, leads to acid release, and decreases somatostatin. So it actually optimizes the digestion of that food, the protein digestion and the mineral digestion. There are also chemoreceptors. Right? So there's mechanoreceptors, those are nerve receptors. There's chemoreceptors, which receive signals from chemicals, nutrients, the pH. So amino acids, alcohol, caffeine in the stomach, they all increase gastrin release. Fatty acids in the duodenum cause the release of CCK. So throughout the intestinal tract, the body's detecting what's there. Do we have a lot of fat? Okay, we need more CCK. Right? Do we have a lot of acid? Oh, we need more secretin to help with the bicarbonate. So it's this constant loop of talking from the intestinal lining and all the different organs and glands that produce things to the brain, to the central nervous system. And this is what happens, right? So even though alcohol and caffeine in the stomach increase gastric release, that could be a good thing if you happen to be doing it with food. But if people are just sitting around drinking beer or drinking coffee and there's no food along with it, we get this sudden increase in gastric acid. So that's not a good thing. So I've got a couple of videos that I found that you might find interesting. The first one is real basic, and there's the link to it. You'll have it in your slides. It's about 9 minutes long, I believe. It's on YouTube. The other one is much longer, and it's by one of our buddies who we've had in as a speaker at Shine and all, and that's Mike Mutzel. And this is a much longer one, and I think it's like, 53 minutes. And the first one is very specific to the gut hormones. Mike talks a lot about the gut hormones, but he also talks about it in relationship to other things. Both are excellent presentations if you want to learn more. And then we have a references and research page. There's a couple of good books, that Hormones of the Digestive System, and then there is The Belly Fat Effect by Mike Mutzel, and there's a few different PowerPoints that I found online that were quite interesting, plus whatever other resources and links I gave you throughout the presentation. So thank you for your attention. I think that there's a lot here to learn. I would expect that you're going to have to go back through this and look at the pictures and really, sit with it in light of what you know about digestion. But I think it really kind of pulls a lot of it together in terms of how this whole thing works, like what stimulates what to do what in all the different jobs that you already knew about, but how is that controlled by the neuroendocrine response? So thank you,